So I will turn this over to Justice Miller to merge item H.
I also wanted to join the Chief Justice in thanking Judge Walkup and Judge McCabe and Judge Ellsworth and all of the members of the committee that either are here in person or those who couldn't make it here today. And again, I wanted to give you a personal thanks because I can imagine the time and the energy and the dedication that you devoted to that. And it's an inspiration to us in that regards. And just as a side note, I wanted to thank the speakers we heard from today and those who have submitted written comments. And if Anthony Pico is still here, if I were a lawyer, I would be at your law school graduation signing you up as an associate also. And I wanted also to take a moment to thank the Chief Justice for your dedication in helping shape, at this time, a judicial branch capable of ensuring access to justice and serving the public as our state struggles through this ongoing fiscal crisis. And also to your dedication over your term to and your direction to E&P to tackle some of the difficult judicial governance issues that we have been talking about and your support of executive planning in that endeavor. But it's now the job of executive and planning to propose a process for consideration and implementation of the recommendations that we have heard from the SEC report today. I would like, though, just to note that while the SEC performed its important and thorough work, the Judicial Council over these last 18 months has been making changes to governance, to leadership, and to oversight. And that work will continue for projects that E&P had started and also for those that will be a part of the SEC recommendations. When Jody Patel became interim administrative director 4 months ago, the Chief Justice directed her to fast-track reorganization plans of the AOC. Under the leadership of Jody Patel and Interim Chief Deputy Director Kurt Soderlund, the AOC has reduced its size. Additional plans for layoffs and other reorganization efforts are underway, as we know. And I'm also pleased to see that several of these efforts are included in the SEC recommendations that are in the report. And I believe, in fact, that we'll find out at least later today or tomorrow that about a third of those issues identified in the SEC report had been discussed and identified by Jody Patel and her team, and that they have already begun to take measures to address them. But, as the SEC report makes clear, there is still work to be done. And as a result of the SEC report being provided to executive and planning by the Chief Justice, and in the interest of transparency, and really mindful of some of the impacts that we have heard about today, with regards to the SEC recommendations, executive and planning is going to recommend that as of today, if it's approved by the Judicial Council, that the report be posted for public comment for a period of 30 days. In our executive and planning meeting where we discussed this, we heard from PJs, from court execs, from appellate justices, and from attorney groups that they wanted to have that opportunity to publicly make comment. And so we are going to recommend that those be collected, that once they are received, that they immediately be posted on a public website. And then we will bring back to the council at our August meeting those particular comments. And I'll state more about what our actual recommendation in that regards is. We also understand the many branch-wide concerns involved in the SEC report and its recommendations, and therefore we are recommending that E&P take full responsibility for preserving the integrity of the SEC report and bringing back to the council recommendations with regards to each of the SEC recommendations. We also, as we've heard today, appreciate the urgency of taking action in the current budget environment. We are also mindful that we are actively recruiting a new administrative director, and one of our recommendations will be that there will be an expectation that once that new director is selected, or if not, then the interim director will be charged with the responsibility for implementing what we as a judicial council recommend, with oversight from executive and planning, and a process that I would like to review. So our recommendation from executive and planning is going to be that as of today, we send it out for a 30-day public comment period, that those public comments will be public and be posted on the webpage, that the report will be assigned to executive and planning for our ownership and for our review and consideration of each recommendation, that E&P will evaluate, prioritize each recommendation, and also determine if there is additional information that E&P needs with respect to any of the recommendations. We are recommending that we not assign any of the recommendations to another group for any further evaluation, but that if we have questions or concerns, we will ask people to come to us, and we will discuss those with them. It may be RUPRO, it may be the interim director, the new director, the chief justice, litigation management, the construction committee, the internal committee for technology, whomever it may be. But our intention is not to assign it to anybody, but to keep that ourselves. We are also going to ask the three SEC members who are incoming new advisory members and a voting member on the council to serve as liaisons to our committee, to help us in the prioritization, the timeline, the evaluation, and the implementation of that. Again, E&P has already scheduled an August 9th meeting, and at that time we will review the public comments, we will prioritize the recommendations, we will create a timeline, and we plan to report back to the council at its August meeting with regards to that. We don't intend to wait until we have reviewed all 147. As we make progress through them, then we will report back on an interim basis at the Judicial Council meetings. And then lastly, we believe it will be the administrative director's responsibility to implement the recommendations, to report back to the council and to executive and planning, with executive and planning and the council providing oversight along with our three SEC members who will remain in that advisory committee for the implementation. So, Chief Justice and Judicial Council members, that is the recommendation for the review of the SEC report from Executive and Planning.
Thank you. What we'll do is come back after our 15-minute recess break to discuss, have you field questions about the report and hear from council members about the report and how to proceed. So we're going to take a break for 15 minutes, and we'll come back at approximately 3:05. Thank you. So we're back in session, and as an adjustment to the agenda, we're going to move item J, which is the budget update, to tomorrow at our half-day meeting. So we have items G and H, and this is our discussion opportunity. And I open the floor for discussion. Judge Hull. Justice Hull.
Sorry. Thank you, Chief. First of all, Judge Walker and Judge McCabe, in your positions as chair and vice chair in the committee, I would like to add my voice to the many others. I don't think it can be said too often that this is a very, very significant effort and a very significant report. However it's characterized in the future, I'm reasonably certain that it's going to be looked upon at least one of the foundational documents for the future of the AOC, and I think we all thank you for that. I was particularly, as chair of Rules and Projects, interested in the recommendations in Chapter 6 relating to rules. We have all heard the complaints, indeed voiced the complaints many times. And I was just wondering, last fall, actually we've started some efforts. They were started when Justice Miller was head of RUPRO, chair of RUPRO, and I took it over last July 1st. Last fall we had some 67 rule proposals that ran to hundreds and hundreds of pages, and we made a decision that with very few exceptions we were only going to consider those that were statutorily mandated or those that were required to be conformed to statute. And we have continued that effort this year. In this rule cycle we're down to 21. I, speaking not as chair of RUPRO or for the council certainly, I don't think that it would be healthy in the future to limit rules proposals to those that are statutorily mandated. I think there are a number of very significant, very positive rules that have come forth over the years that were not statutorily mandated, but I certainly agree that we need to take a hard look at what should be rules of court and what should not. I noticed also, or I mentioned also this morning, that we're undertaking an effort and have been to identify rules that can be either amended or suspended or even repealed based upon their sort of a cost-benefit analysis to the branch. And also, we've already undertaken, and we are in the process of undertaking, a review of the rulemaking process in general, including examining how other jurisdictions make their rules of court, and with an emphasis, not the only emphasis, one, but one in getting rules proposals before the trial and appellate courts early on in the process so that we can have their input into the costs and consequences of rules that may not be apparent to those who are proposing them. I guess my question is, we're not looking for a pat on the back, but it seems to me that these efforts, while they don't parrot the SEC recommendations as to changes in rulemaking, they seem to me to be at least consistent with the spirit of those recommendations. And could I have your views on that?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Judge Walker. That's all I have. This afternoon.
They do.
Good. We're all trial lawyers here, and you don't ask any more questions when you get that kind of answer.
Got your answer. No, that's the spirit. That's exactly right.
Chief.
Yes, yes. Judge Wesley.
Thank you. Judge Walkup, Judge McCabe, and members of the SEC committee, it is with sincere gratitude that I thank you for all of your work and the dedication that your committee had. The goal of the report, as I read your report, was to make reasonable recommendations that, if followed, can form part of a strategy to promote and increase transparency, accountability, and efficiency in the AOC. I believe you've accomplished those goals. I want to congratulate you. I think the title of Judicial Branch Loyalist, I like that a lot. I thank you very much for a job well done. Chief Justice, in reading over the comments of presiding judges and others around the state, you are congratulated in those comments for selecting a committee that was well-balanced and considerate, thoughtful, consisted of judicial officers and others in creating a committee described as a bold move. And also I heard today described as a brilliant move. So I congratulate you also. And I join those comments, Chief, in congratulating you. But I think it's time for the council to be bold also. But before I have recommendations that I'll make, but before I do that, I have a question. And Judge Walker, how would you recommend that this council, you've heard Justice Miller's recommendation, how would you recommend that this council go about prioritizing, implementing, and monitoring the implementation of recommendations by the committee?
You would have to ask, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Well, I think we've reflected on it, and there are probably a number of ways to do it. But what concerns me is the focus seems to be on methodology. What type of committee do we want to have? What kind of process we want to have? And it seems to me, in my humble opinion, that the first thing that has to happen is a commitment. That there has to be, you know, here we are at this historic one moment in time for this judicial branch to get things right and to get things moving. And there has to be some kind of a commitment. And once you have that commitment, then there's probably a number of ways to implement that will. So having said that, I heard Justice Miller's proposal. I would agree with that. I would have an interest in trying to make sure that the recommendations were properly vetted, and that is the stage that we're at. We're not at the stage of adoption. We're at the stage of considering this. There were some criticisms in the letters that were submitted that people didn't have a chance to comment on our report. We were not asked to put it out for that, but that is now what's going to occur. So I think that that should occur. And then I think that there should be some very tight control over how this is monitored. I think anyone involved in government knows that the best way to kill a project is to assign it to a committee. And if you really want to kill it, assign it to several committees and don't set a timetable. And so that's my concern. I think we need some time limits, and I think we need some will, and I think we need to implement.
Thank you.
Here, wait, no, I see several hands raised. Are you finished, Judge Wesley?
All right, yeah, I'm not going to make a motion until it's
okay,
appropriate time when you tell me I'll make a motion.
Okay, so let me ask for Justice Miller, Judge Rosenberg, and Judge Rubin, please remember your order.
Mine's easy. I'm first. I appreciate those comments because I agree with them. I also agree that the first start has to be commitment. And I can only tell you that for the last 16 months, ENP has been given the charge to look at the governance of the Judicial Council, to look at the oversight of the AOC. And we have had a number of meetings, which I have talked about, where we've had closed session meetings without staff, without AOC, to talk about those. We came up with different ideas, and we have reported back on a number of those, and we have many, many more that we are still considering, and now we'll even consider in a broader sense that aren't being, we're not a part of the SEC. So I can only give you my personal commitment that we look at this serious. That's why we didn't want to create a SEC committee too, that it's going to be ENP's responsibility. And we're going to put the public comments on the webpage. We're going to report back at every meeting, and it will be transparent and accountable, and you can hold me and my committee members accountable. So, yes, there's a commitment, and, yes, we're going to do the things you talked about, prioritize, timeline. We hope to have that all ready by August. And we're going to monitor and implement, and we're going to do it with – we're going to put an additional burden on the three of you to help us in that regards.
Thank you, Chief. I, too, want to say thank you to all the members of the committee for a year of really hard labor outside of your day jobs. As you know, I'm chair of the presiding judge's advisory committee for another 2 months, 23 days and 6 hours. And as the chief mentioned and as Judge Wacob mentioned, the PJs have been really actively involved in this process, both at the inception and also most recently. The PJs, under my predecessor, Judge Enright, provided about 180 pages of input that the chief read all the pages and all the input that was provided to the SEC as they started. And the PJs at that time, I think, were very reflective, both pro and con, of issues that were of concern to them. So I guess I have a comment, and then I have one question. My comment is, there is a memo that the PJ committee sent to all of you. We wanted to provide input. We posed, at the request of the PJs, several questions to the PJs, and I presented to you the raw votes, if you will. I can tell you my sense is that the PJs are united, frankly, virtually unanimous. I only say virtually because I haven't heard from each and every one. But from the ones that I have heard from, they are all supportive of the SEC report. The only division, if you will, is a substantial number of PJs want to have this council immediately adopt and implement the report, and a substantial number of PJs want a more deliberative process in tracking and implementing the report. I think the end result would be the same, but that's the dividing line. And frankly, that's what we heard today in the public comments, those two different approaches. On balance, I will say that I agree with Judge Wacob and what I've heard from the members of the SEC with the recommendation that has been made by Justice Miller. I sit on the ENP. I can assure you that I will keep the SEC recommendations front and center. We'll track them. Nothing will be swept under the rug. We'll deal with them straight up. So here is my question. Judge McCabe, you mentioned something that really threw me for a loop a little bit, and I want to get your feedback on this.
Is that a first?
First of many. You said that you don't want to tie the hands of the new ADOC, the new administrative director, that person should be involved and that person's vision should be implemented in running this agency, the AOC. In a sense, that's inconsistent with the council just adopting the recommendations. Because, for example, the recommendations clearly lay out a restructuring. This is the new structure. Now, there can be 10 different structures, but you've laid out a particular structure and a plan. So how are we going to involve the new administrative director? How are we going to implement that person's vision if this council were to adopt those recommendations?
Frankly,
if we were to adopt them today, we would really be tying that person's hands.
Not necessarily, and here's why. And let me expand on what I said. It has to be a collaborative process. And don't kid yourself. The new ADOC, which is Administrative Director of the Courts, for those watching on camera and don't know what we're talking about, ADOC. The new ADOC has to work with the governing body. In a corporate structure, this is the board of directors, and they are the CEO of the corporation. And every one of those private sector relationships, and as here in this governmental organization, it's a collaborative process. They have to work with each other. So there's going to be some give and take. This is the body that passes policy, like every other board of directors. But they're going to come in and tell you, well, here's my vision and here's what I'd like to do. It may be inconsistent with what you've already approved, but I'd like to modify this by doing this. And this may result in a little different result. However, maybe the spirit is the same, close result, et cetera. And I would say this board, this council needs to be flexible. And that they shouldn't tie the AD's hands to sweeping reforms before they've even arrived. I don't think that's fair to them because, quite frankly, you may get somebody who is very in tune to all the elements that are necessary to run this organization, managerial, political, leadership, right down the line. And they may have a different perspective that requires folks to bend a little. That's what I'm saying is this should not tie their hands. This body should be flexible enough and open enough to be receptive to any suggestions from the new director. And if those are in the collective wisdom appropriate or meet the spirit of it, so be it. And then you modify it. So even if you, for whatever reason, adopted every recommendation today, I would tell you if the new director comes in 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, whenever, and says, I'd like to change this, be open to it. I don't have a problem with that. Of course, I'm a non-voting advisory member, so I don't have a vote. But I don't have a problem with that. And I hope you don't either. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes. Thank you.
After Judge Rubin, it'll be Judge Friedman, Commissioner Alexander, then Jody, then Judge Kaufman.
Thank you, Chief. I wanted to make a statement on behalf of CJA, of which I am lame duck president as of yesterday or the day before. The SEC report, CJA feels, is an important contribution to this branch. It takes a looks critically at the AOC with an eye towards improving its service to the court, the public, and making it more efficient. And CJA wants to start out by congratulating the chief for her leadership and undertaking this difficult and important process. We also feel that the branch and everyone in it owes a great debt of thanks to Judge Walkup, Judge McCabe, and all the SEC committee judges who for 55 weeks took a lot of time out of their day jobs and wrote this outstanding analysis of the AOC. Our colleagues already commended for their hard work. We also want to recognize the hard work of Jody Patel and Kurt Sutherland over the last months and the many hardworking employees at the AOC provide important support to the branch, just as Judge Walkup and Judge McCabe talked about today. We don't, and you can look at this report differently, we don't see this report as an attack so much as an important look at AOC structure and management. It, as it describes, and as we've heard and we've discussed around this room in the past, there are some past management decisions and attitudes that have had a negative impact on AOC's important work and on the branch, and the processes that allow that occur we're now looking at, and we're going to obviously going to be taking efforts to make some corrections. As everyone in here knows, CJA for a long time has advocated for a greater role of the council in terms of its oversight over the AOC. And the beauty, we think, as you look at this report, is that it starts that conversation without intending to be the last words we've just heard from Judge McCabe and earlier from Judge Walkup. It's not meant to be written in stone. There has to be some flexibility, some discussion, some input from all the stakeholders, including the 2,600 or so members of CJA. On the thoughtful presentation of the 147 proposals gives us all that opportunity to assist in the modernization of the council staff agency. CJA supports the work of the SEC committee and its report and encourages the Judicial Council to move as quickly as is practicable to implement the appropriate recommendations, obviously after input from the different stakeholders. And we look forward to the opportunity during this comment period to actually make some suggestions on some particular proposals that we would like to weigh in on. So thank you to Judge Walkup, Judge McCabe, the SEC committee, and, of course, the chief for her leadership in this area. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Rubin. Judge Friedman.
Thank you, Chief, and thank you to all the members of the SEC for putting before the council such an important report. I just have a question that arises very much from one of the themes of the public comments earlier today from most of the speakers, and it's a methodology question addressed to the overarching obligation of the council to assure access to justice to everyone in the state of California. Was the SEC able to survey and interview legal aid providers, the attorneys that depend upon the draft program that provide counsel in juvenile dependency cases, and others like that whose interests are so tied up with the work of the AOC and many of the divisions in the AOC?
I would comment that our group sent questionnaires and surveys to many groups and entities outside the judicial branch who were stakeholders in our system, to and including the state bar, specialized bar associations, and so forth. So without looking at my list of who we sent those to, I know that we tried to be as inclusive as possible. And in that effort, I'm sure that we probably missed someone. But we gave everybody that we could think of a chance to respond. And we knew, too, that when we were done with our report, there would be a further opportunity for people to respond.
If there's any way to let us know who were some of those stakeholder groups that you surveyed and interviewed, I know many of us would be interested in that. And it's obviously very difficult to identify everyone that might have something to say, but certainly those who are most vulnerable in our state and have the least access to the court system, who depend upon legal aid programs that are funded in part by the Access Fund and other related funding programs and are assisted by the Center for Families, Children, and the Courts, are vitally important to our mission and our obligation.
Understood.
Thank you.
Sue, then Jody, Judge Kaufman, and then Kim Turner.
My question is for Justice Miller. In the past, when we had some concerns about CCMS, they set up the internal committee who was a regular reporter for every judicial council meeting and gives a report of what's happening and led to the meeting we had where some decisions were made and is ongoing now with regards to IT services. Is the expectation of E&P that the review of this and maybe some piecemeal recommendations regarding specific would come up at each meeting that we have, or is your are you thinking of some other process?
Our intent was clearly not to look at all 147 and whenever that time may be, come back to you with all of those at one time. So our goal was to meet August 9th, to prioritize, go through the public comments, and create a timeline, and maybe even come up with some recommendations at that time of ones we may be able to recommend to the council to adopt, and then to continue that process until we've gone through all 147, and just like the Commission for Impartial Courts that I was on, come back when we're ready with recommendations for implementation. So would that be every meeting? I hope. Would it maybe every other one? Sometimes I can't say. So, but our goal is to do them quickly and to have a timeline for you in August.
Well, I was just thinking that for the idea that it doesn't get, you know, pushed under the rug and people aren't paying attention, is that if there was something as part of your regular report.
I'll do it.
That said, this is what we're considering. We don't have any specific recommendations for this meeting, but this is where we are and this is what we're working on would go a long way to making people think that it's
great idea.
Being paid attention to.
We'll make sure.
Jody, you're next.
Thank you, Chief. I don't have a question. I just wanted to say and join in with everyone else who's spoken so far. A thank you to Judge Wacob and Judge McCabe, as well as the SEC committee, for your very informative report. I can say confidently that my executive team and I, as long as I'm interim director here, and I'm confident that whoever the permanent ADOC is will do the same thing, but that the executive team and I are committed to working closely with Justice Miller and executive and planning, as well as the Judicial Council, to continue to further the priorities and goals not only of the Judicial Council but of the judicial branch in its entirety. So. You have our commitment as well on behalf of the executive team.
Thank you. Judge Kaufman, Kim Turner, then Justice Baxter, then Alan Carlson.
I have two areas. One is, Jody, how many employees we have in AOC now? 800 and what?
884.
So we've made a 20% cut since?
We're making significant progress, yes.
Since the last 4 months, okay.
Yes.
You know, I'm listening to everything, and I think we all share the same goal, and that is we need to make this work. We started 15 years ago, and we've got to where we are today. And the point is, it didn't get broken in one day. We're not going to fix it in one day. So let's take our time and do it right. This is an opportunity. This is an excellent opportunity. The chief has created the SEC. We have the report now. Now it's the Judicial Council's obligation to ensure that something happens. Although Justice Miller and I have disagreed on how it should happen, I'm now convinced that his alternative is appropriate because somebody has to own it, and I have the utmost faith in Justice Miller and the other members of the ENP to do something and to make and not let them drop the ball. And I think the reason I say we have to take time is demonstrated by one area is that Judge McCabe says we should start implementing changes and let the ADOC, when he comes in, he or she comes in, make some suggestions, make some changes. But in today's packet, dated June 20th, it's a letter from Clark Kelso. And when Clark Kelso says something, I read it, okay? I don't always agree with Clark Kelso, but I read it. And his take is a little different than yours. And I certainly urge everybody to read the letter. Mm-hmm. And then take into consideration what Judge McCabe is saying. And I'm not saying who's right or wrong, but it demonstrates why we need to take the time to do this right. There's different views, different ways of doing things. And it's not a question of the SEC was right or wrong. It's a question, how do we work together to correct it and get there? And it's the old saying is, you may be wrong and I may be right, but come let us sit down and talk, and then maybe we'll find the truth. That's what we have to do.
Thank you. Kim Turner?
Thank you, Chief. And I want to join the chorus of accolades for the SEC for the amazing work that you did, the significant contribution to helping us to set the chart the course for the future. But I also wanted to just sort of piggyback on some of the comments that Judge Friedman made, because I think what was interesting to me today, I'm really grateful for the testimony we heard earlier from Justice Zelon, from Mr. Pico, from Mr. Wasatch and others, who talked about some of the pieces of the AOC's work that are outside the scope of what AOC does specifically and directly for trial courts. Back in 2006, when the Judicial Council adopted the strategic plan that is currently in place for 6 years, this is the final year of this plan, we were really awash in money, and we identified at that time many, many important aspirational goals for the council, some of which had direct impact on trial courts and some of which had more of an impact on equal access and how our citizens are served and how the branch would function to be a really public service responsive organization. And I think I was really pleased to hear, Judge Wacob, that at the beginning of your comments, you talked about how your focus was really on the services to the trial courts and perhaps not on some of these other aspirational areas. So I want to make sure that we go on the record and say that the council set the course for the AOC. The AOC does not on its own decide what projects it's going to do and doesn't decide which things to do and how to prioritize them and which things not to do. That's the council's work. The council does that in a public way. The council did that in 2006. In 2008, the council adopted an operational plan that gave further guidance to the AOC on what to be doing with its time. And in fact, over the course of this downturn of the last 3 or 4 years, the council had an obligation to, I think, reset the priorities of the AOC if there were things that the AOC should stop doing and if more focus needed to be on direct service to the trial courts and less focus on other things. So I wanted to make sure that I got that comment on the record. And I also want to just make one further comment about the issue of tone, because you commented on it. I know you've heard from a few people that they thought the tone was somewhat harsh, and you don't believe that it was overly harsh, and I appreciate that. What I do want to say is that for the many, many people that are listening today, that read that report, especially current and former employees of the AOC, I think they felt somewhat hurt and devalued by the tone of the report. And I want to say publicly that I think every employee, whether they're providing direct service to the trial courts or whether they're providing service in some other area, needs to be recognized by this council as having provided amazing contributions to the quality of justice. And I would like to make that comment.
Yeah. Justice Baxter.
As the senior statesman here, not only in terms of tenure, but also in terms of age, I'd like to also add my congratulations for the work you've done. I think the chief's decision to initiate this investigation and report and the results of it is historic. I think if we learned anything at all from those who spoke to us at the beginning of this afternoon session, I think the message that we should take to heart is that there must be healthy discussion and the opportunity to dissent on virtually every recommendation that bears discussion. And I think the format that Justice Miller has outlined accomplishes that. I do have one suggestion, however. As I understand it, the public comment period would be for the first 30 days. And I would suggest that perhaps when your committee meets, you might want to consider having a more flexible public comment period, especially if it's going to be, if certain recommendations are going to be adopted over a period of time, so that the public, and I think it's really important that the public weigh in here, so that the public can set forth their views as to whether certain recommendations should be strengthened, weakened, or adopted as is. It's very difficult for that to be done in a 30-day period, especially when there's so many different things to focus on. So I'd suggest that your committee might want to consider that as a possibility.
But we will. I think that's a great idea. We'll try to think of other ways to accomplish.
Thank you, Justice Banks. Alan?
Thank you, Chief. I want to thank the SEC committee for what you've done, added to what everybody else said. For a long time, I got paid to do what you do. That was my day job. It's a hard job, and you did a great job considering it wasn't your day job to do that. I also think that what you said today, the two of you, significantly adds to the report itself. And I would ask that, if assuming this was recorded, that the recording, the whole thing, not edited, be made available. Because I think if we send it out for public comment, we ought to cite the where it is on the webpage. You can listen to this report as part of it. I'm going to tell all my colleagues, I don't want to hear their comments until I know they've listened to this, because I think this is a relevant part of what's going on. Also, wearing my hat as chair of SEAC, SEAC has talked about this, and our response was we have a lot of positions the same as the presiding judges do, but we stand ready to help the committee or anybody else on suggestions and implementation. There was just a lot of enthusiasm. Yeah, let's go forward and do something. Taking off that hat and putting on a personal hat, I have a question, and I think probably it's whether this was discussed in your committee. I'm trying to reconcile a little bit of what I heard today from the speakers and what's in the report, and I maybe have to go back and read it again. I hear two different themes here about what the role of the AOC is. One has to do with the core value and services to the trial courts, which you talked about, something you focused on. But there was a lot of discussion, Judge Friedman and Kim in particular, and several speakers, about the role of the AOC on a bigger, beyond just helping the trial courts. Did your committee get into that at all? Did you see part of what needs to happen is a narrowing down to the services core functions? Or did you talk about that and you're as split up as the rest of us are on that?
We talked about that for days. That was the kickoff question for the whole study, was what are the essential functions of the AOC? And we started, you'll notice in each division report in the SEC report, that one of the first things we talked about and tried to identify was what are the statutory and other obligations of each division. That's the starting point. And we were actually surprised as a committee when we started fresh to see this sort of constellation of statutory requirements all over the place that imposed these different obligations on divisions and on the AOC as a whole that we never knew about. And I think the public doesn't know about. Maybe some of us don't even know about it here yet, but there's a lot out there. And so I think the starting point was to try to identify what are the essential services, recognizing that it is this body, it's the council, decides what goes with that. But we didn't think that there had been a concerted effort to try to identify what were the core functions, what are the required. Let's start there. Let's see what we need to do, especially in this budget time where I think the budget is going to make everybody pare down to that question anyway. But starting there, and then really after that, it's the council's choice. We didn't make policy decisions. We didn't say services provided by CFCC were a bad thing or a good thing. We just talked about the efficiencies and so forth, recognizing the policy decisions that have already been made. The CFCC is there for a reason, to use the speaker's examples. So I don't know if that's answering your question, but we did try to identify as a starting point what were the minimum statutory imposed requirements, the rules of court, directives from the Judicial Council, and then sift out where we thought the divisions and the activities of the AOC had sort of just grown without a rudder, without a clear direction, without a clear policy statement. Because just like any other bureaucratic agency, things just tend to grow unless they're looked at. And that was kind of our starting point.
Judge, you, then Miriam Crinson.
Thank you. It feels presumptuous, but I'd like to also thank the members of the SEC for this report. It was so clearly and precisely written. I started reading it over that weekend when I first got it, and I was amazed that it was so easy to read. You assimilated so much information, and you didn't have staff support or secretarial support. And I want to also thank you for not making it 800 pages. I want to just also add my comments to thank the chief. It really is fearless that the chief is giving this branch the opportunity at this time to take a hard look at ourselves, to kind of appreciate what we've done, and then to move forward. I think that when we come out of this process, we'll find that it's been therapeutic and cathartic. Mm-hmm. I thank the speakers who came this afternoon, and I really can't add to what they've said about the issues of access, self-help, serving self-represented litigants, language access. But there are some things that haven't been mentioned, and I wanted to make sure that as we move forward and we assimilate the recommendations of the SEC and then the further statements or comments of the public who will look at this and comment in either the 30 days or the rolling comment period, there's some things that I think that I'd like to make sure is they're considered, because I'm going to be going off this council. So one is the grants piece, because my understanding is that some of these grants are things that the AOC did not apply for, but they're provided for by statute. For example, the Violence Against Women Education Project, that's through funds set aside by the federal government under the VAWA. In addition, there's the Equal Access Funds grant, for example, the Family Law Information Center, the five model self-help pilot projects. Those are all statutory monies that we get that are in the State Budget Act. So in terms of the comment that the SEC has made about grants, I'd like us to just pause there and take more stock and get more information before the council takes any action on deciding whether or not to pursue grants, because certainly we've heard today about all the great work that was done through that seed money. For example, Justice Elon said you can't start a self-help center without that seed money. Another thing that we haven't really paused on today is the work of the Judicial Council implemented by the AOC in the area of diversity and recognition of bias. That's actually mentioned in the first goal of those six strategic goals of the council, access and diversity. In 1987, actually, Chief Justice Byrd started the advisory committee on gender bias in the courts. That committee came up with 68 recommendations, which were then adopted by the council. In 1991, the Judicial Council established the Advisory Committee on Racial and Ethnic Bias in the Court, and I believe that's what Judge Walsh mentioned. So he was on the council quite a long time ago. In 1994, the Advisory Committee on Access and Fairness was established. In April of 2002, the first statewide conference on race and ethnic bias in the courts was held in this state, and I was there, and it was really a remarkable thing. In October of 2006, the first summit on increasing diversity on the bench was held. And last fall, a five-year subsequent look at that issue was convened here in this building with the help and the hard work of the AOC employees. While the State Bar also took leadership role on that, none of the strides that we've made with respect to diversity on the bench could have happened without the leadership of the Judicial Council and the hard work of the AOC staff. In fact, all the pipeline projects dovetail extraordinarily well with civic education, because as we're going out there trying to increase the pipeline for minority students to understand the potential of a legal career, we're also educating our citizenry about the courts and the judicial branch. A couple weeks ago, I spoke at the Pathways to Justice Conference, and I realized even small little things, or seemingly small things, that AOC staff does has extraordinary impact or meaning for some people. So, for example, now we post the report for judicial vacancies on our website, and I heard at the Pathways to Justice Conference that for legal services attorneys, that was an extraordinary step. It was very meaningful, because otherwise they wouldn't have any idea as to when there were vacancies and when they could apply. And in terms of diversity, we would like to see, you know, including more lawyers with legal services backgrounds as bench officers in the state. So there, I think that there's many things that we can't foresee right now that will be impacted once we start implementing some of the recommendations that come from the SEC report. Another thing that I think is probably going to be impacted as we cut staff, but I think would be too bad, and I hope that the council keeps sight of as we move forward, is just the level of responsiveness that many of us in this state have enjoyed when we deal with people at the AOC. We're not just dealing with lawyers who are experts. We're actually, it comes through that they have a love of their job, that they're really purpose-driven. For example, I taught a few weeks ago at the National Judicial College, and when I was there, as an aside, every single judge from all over the country said, you know, you guys are leaders in judicial education. Your CJR puts out amazing materials. Your CJR is great in terms of what it does in judicial education. But there were two co-faculty members who were not from the California judicial system, and they didn't have what they needed in terms of teaching this class. So I said, oh, I think I can get that. So I sent an email to Bonnie Huff, and within 60 minutes, she sent me 5 emails that had attachments, documents, you know, all reports, things that CJR and the AOC had promulgated. That level of responsiveness is actually, I think, legend, that the AOC staff has been Herculean in their ability to respond immediately, quickly. I get emails from people on holidays, late at night, on weekends. So I would hate to see that get lost as we move forward and make cuts, and I hope that we can be thoughtful in that process. Lastly, we heard from very eloquent speakers today, and they had important things to say, but unfortunately we didn't have any court customers come forward. And I know a number of years ago a survey was done of people who have been users of the self-help center, or self-help centers across the state. So there's just two comments out of really, I think, almost 100 that I'd like to highlight because I want the court customers or the clients' voices also to be part of the mix when we consider what we're going to be doing in the next few months. One is from a person who says, "The Family Law Center has helped me every step of the way. I don't know where I'd be without it. The people are very helpful. I'm a single mom with low income, and without this center, I would not have been able to accomplish anything." The other is, "I had not taken care of divorce for 3 years because of financial and lack of knowledge and procedures. Staff guided me through this kindly and intelligently, extremely helpful. Without it, I probably would have just taken the paperwork home and put it aside for 3 more years. So thank you so much for the report, and I'll be listening and watching after October when I'm no longer a member of this body, but I know that you have a hard task before you, and I'm in some ways relieved that I won't be here.
Well, we know where you are. Thank you for those very thoughtful comments. We'll hear from Miriam Krinsky and then Judge Earl.
Well, I guess I'm another part of that aging out group, although, frankly, I wish I were going to be here because I think there's no dispute that these are incredibly challenging times and that there are some difficult issues that the council needs to grapple with. But in my mind, one of the biggest takeaways from this report is that it's the council that needs to grapple with these issues. I think we've heard the message increasingly over time that leadership ends with the council. I mean, it starts and ends here, that we are that presence that you all criticized wasn't on the org chart, and that for us to simply adopt the report en masse would be inconsistent with that. And I think that the chair and the vice chair of the committee have acknowledged that and made that clear. For us not to have a process that includes the transparency and the input of all users, legal services organizations, clients, stakeholders, and hopefully I'm sure the public comment effort would be a very robust effort to include all of those voices. For us not to engage in that kind of a process, again, would be shirking our responsibility. And so I think this is kind of our moment to step up. And the way we step up is not is to start the conversation, not to end the conversation, with simply taking work that's been done and adopting it without engaging and forcing ourselves to grapple with what it sounds like the committee grappled with, namely what should be the vision of the AOC. And I have to say in that regard, challenging times force you to reevaluate what is an organization, what is an entity, what is a branch about. And obviously, there have been problems over time. And I think some of the problems may be as much perception as they are actual problems. I think many of the problems have been communication problems. That's not to say that there aren't things that could be done better. And I think, the Chief, you've done so much in a short period of time to move things forward. And Jody, you know, through Herculean efforts, has been trying to implement changes and not simply, you know, keep the chair warm in the meantime. But I think that I have a little bit of pause and concern with the notion that even in tough times, that what the AOC or what leadership of the branch should be about is simply a business model. I mean, you all have presented a phenomenal business model, and I understand and you've acknowledged today a lot of limitations in terms of what you viewed as your charge and what you did or didn't have access to and the resources you did or didn't have. And it wasn't about applauding good things that are being done. It was about identifying problems with, you know, limited resources, with self-reporting, with information, you know, that you viewed as not always giving you what you needed. But I think it's a time to grapple with, among the council, what is the right model? Is it purely a business model, or is it one that acknowledges that access to justice, that, you know, the needs of the most vulnerable people in our community may not be a business-minded decision, but it's the right decision? So I think that not simply is the process that Justice Miller suggested the right process, and I would encourage part of the send-out to include Alan's suggestion that not just the presentation today, which I think was phenomenal and added richly to what I had read in the report, it added tremendous layers to it in my mind, but I think also that audio that includes the public testimony of the morning is equal, or was it the morning or the afternoon? It's running together after lunch. It feels like a year ago. I think that's equally valuable. And I think that the other part I would add, in addition to the importance of underscoring in a public comment send out the link and that people be encouraged to listen to all of it, I also think to make clear that we take seriously and we are committed to this process and we're committed to grappling with what we're about, that when this comes back in August, that we should put front and center a discussion of Chapter 4, and that needs to start, and that should start quite soon, because for this council to really start to think about where does it come out, and are there, you know, why can't we start to really commit to how do we define our role? And I think that there needs to be a sooner rather than later discussion about that. The only other thing I would add is, and again, maybe it's easy for those of us, you know, who are sort of going to be moving on. I've worked with some incredible people at AOC over the years. And I also know that there have been concerns over the years, and I think that this report well articulates those concerns. But I frankly did find parts of it, and I know it wasn't intended to be viewed that way, I found parts of it to be justifiably troubling in their tone for the committed people who work in this building, who are, you know, dealing with the tough times. There are obviously people in our trial courts who are dealing with the tough times as well. And I think if one went out and looked to study, you know, things that have been done wrong throughout, one could do it. But I think it's important for this dialogue to occur in a way that acknowledges not simply the problems, but also to try to capture what's of value in what's been done, so that as we try to move in tough fiscal times to a more dollars and cents approach, we don't get rid of what we need to be valuing, but that we haven't adequately, perhaps at times, known about or captured through a business type analysis.
Thank you, Miriam. And this is available on the web as our most, in fact, all judicial counsel meetings.
For the insomniacs, yeah.
Yes. Judge Earle.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief. I, too, want to thank the members of the SEC for the report and for your courage in the way that you authored the report, and the Chief in for your courage in demonstrating your leadership in forming this committee. I have a different take on the tone of the report than some of my colleagues, and perhaps that's the beauty of having multiple people that sit on the Judicial Council with varying experiences. I got the sense that the tone of the report was the authors conveying the tone and feelings of those they interviewed, not the tone of the authors themselves. And I think to not have included that would have given us an unrealistic impression of the feelings that exist among trial court judges and trial court employees, and the frustrations that exist among them as well. So I think it is important for us to consider that, that those feelings do exist among trial courts. And I don't believe that the tone itself lends itself to devaluing any of the work of the AOC employees. I think the report itself reflects perhaps some shortcomings of those who are responsible for oversight of AOC employees, including the council. And I think we do have a good opportunity here for change. Justice Miller, applaud you for welcoming the SEC members of the council into the EMP committee. I think that that will be important as we move forward in looking at the recommendations. And I do think I'm sorry that we're losing some folks from on the council, but I do think this is a good time to be involved. And I look forward to working with everybody on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Judge Herman, then Judge Wesley.
You know, I am very concerned for the AOC employees, because I think I've shared the experience of the many have expressed here. The experiences I have been, by and large, extremely positive. The other side of the coin, though, is the report is here. And as judicial officers, by and large, on the council, as well as lawyers, as well as court professionals, you know, we're by training, we look past tone. And I think we got to get past the tone issue, look at and evaluate the substance on a go-forward basis. Just my thought.
Thank you, Judge Herman. Judge Wesley.
I'd like to make a motion, but I don't want to cut off discussion, Chief. So if you'll tell me if it's the...
No, I was looking around, and it seems that I would call the question in terms of motion.
All right. I have two motions. The first motion is that the council accept the SEC report with gratitude and endorse the report, acknowledging its significance and timeliness, and allowing for a public comment period before discussing implementation. That is my motion.
Is there going to be only one motion? Or do you say
I have a second motion after that. If you want me to make it now, I can.
Well, I'd like to hear it, too.
All right.
A friendly amendment to your friendly amendment. To your first motion.
My second motion is that the council follow Miriam Krinsky's advice, and that it step up, and that it also take the advice of the SEC Commission and show commitment by endorsing and implementing recommendations 4.1 through 4.4 and I'd like to take them up one at a time.
Okay, so we'll first take the first motion. I heard a second off of this side of the room.
No, over here.
Oh, Sue, you seconded. Okay. Any discussion on the acceptance?
I have a question for Judge Jessica.
Yes.
Could you mic that?
Can you repeat that again, what it was? We accept it, we endorse it, and we...
We accept it with gratitude, endorsing the report, acknowledging its significance and timeliness, and allowing for a 30-day comment period before discussing implementation.
I wasn't sure what you meant by endorse,
right.
Then.
Yeah.
What I mean is I endorse the report. Doesn't mean you endorse every single one of the recommendations, but endorse the report received from this committee as a significant, important report for this council.
Question?
Okay. So, Judge Kaufman.
How does that conflict with what you're asking the EMP committee to do?
It doesn't.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with you, yeah. Judge Wesley.
I think there has to be a joint motion.
Yeah, I agree.
That entails some of that, and then the recommendations of EMP.
Well, I made my motion. If you have a
second. So I have a
motion.
Second through Commissioner Alexander, correct? So that is the accept, endorse, acknowledge with a 30-day comment period, notwithstanding other discussion. Okay. Said so.
I'm making a substitute motion. I would support Judge Wesley's motion without the word endorse.
Mm-hmm.
So my substitute motion is delete endorse from his motion.
Point of order. That would be an amendment. It would not be a substitute.
Either it's a friendly amendment or you reword it to have a substitute motion. Chief, wait a minute. What is it a friendly amendment, Judge Sell?
Well, he's not going to accept a friendly amendment.
Okay, so is it a motion? It's a substitute motion?
It would be a motion to amend.
That would be a motion to amend. Thank you.
In other words, if that passes, then the main motion is on the floor as amended.
Okay. Judge O'Malley.
I would like to add, or at least add comment at this time about Justice Baxter's recommendation that it not be strictly a 30-day comment period, but a rolling comment period, depending upon the issues as they arise. Certainly, it's going to be at least initially a 30-day period, but leave it open as issues arise, not closing off completely the comment period after 30 days.
That sounds like a friendly amendment, too. Judge Wesley, are you interested in that friendly amendment?
Mine was to Judge Sears.
Yeah, my only problem is that if we don't have some place where mm-hmm. we say, okay, we're going to move forward with this, mm-hmm. We discussed this at E&P, and we thought that a 30-day comment period, because it's been out for discussion already, mm-hmm. was sufficient. But it's clear to me that when we get into some of these recommendations, there's going to be further comment. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you phrase that without having some specific cutoff period so we can move on.
Okay, Judge Hall and then Miriam Krinsky.
Thank you, Chief. And I don't think this is in the nature of a further friendly amendment. I'm confused on the parliamentary procedure enough as it is. But I think that the difficulty I have with Judge Wesley's motion, at least, is it's somewhat in the nature of a compound question or violates the single subject rule or something like that. And so if it is put to a vote as moved, I agree with parts of it. I don't agree with other parts of it, and I'm going to be in a very difficult position whether I should vote yes or no.
Okay. Miriam Krinsky and then Judge Baker.
Well, but before I could the motion could you reread it one more time, Judge Wesley?
I don't know if I could. I think the motion was
okay.
That the Judicial Council accept the SEC report with gratitude and endorse the report, acknowledging its significance and timeliness, and allowing a 30-day comment period before implementing the report.
So I have.
Okay, what do you mean by implementing?
Okay, I have a question, and I think the chief had started. I have a question, and then I have a thought on the 30-day. So maybe the thought. It seems to me that the 30-day makes a lot of sense, makes good sense. And Justice Baxter, I understand your thought, I would assume that as other issues over time come to the council, there's still an opportunity for people to comment the way they have by coming today, by writing letters. But at least initially, a 30-day period where this can be put out, where individuals who want to give input have a chance to give input, and they don't feel that it's rolling so they don't have to give input right now. They're given a chance. It's out there. But if specific issues then in later months come forward, there's no prohibition on input on specific issues at a later time. So I just think there's some value to knowing that there's an end point so that groups aren't misled by thinking, oh, I'll wait because they haven't gotten to Chapter 7 yet or Chapter 9, and that's what I'm really worried about. I think we need to have a chance for people to see this, to give input on it, and to not sort of rest assured that they'll later have that chance if that may not come up. So, but the question I have is, I'm not sure I understood the last part, which is, so we put it out for 30 days and then we implement. It didn't seem to me like that sounded consistent with what EMP is recommending. And I don't know, Judge Wesley, if you're intending to be recommending that after the 30-day it move through the EMP process, or after 30 days it all comes to the council for an up or down. So I just wasn't sure about that last part.
Being on EMP and having discussed the process, I have no problem with the idea that somebody has to oversee this.
Okay.
And the agreement was, I think, from the EMP group, that SEC committee members on the Judicial Council would be advisory to the EMP, and that the EMP would move the recommendations forward. You'll call that implementing, in a timely fashion.
So could
but somebody has to do that.
Could
what I'm trying to do is get us to accept and endorse. We'll change the word, endorse the importance of the recommendations, so that we get this report before us. Because I can't make my second motion until we get this report before us, and we have to accept this report. And then the procedural manner of implementing is what I think EMP is talking about. That's a different motion.
No.
Okay, so Judge Baker, then it's going to be Judge Jacobson, Judge Ellsworth, and then Justice Baxter.
Well, with respect, I think the current motion is vague, ambiguous, overly broad, compound. And I think we should vote it down. It's well intended, I know. What I think we should do is accept the report for consideration. Without placing any value judgment on it, we accept it for consideration. That motion then passes, and then I would think that the next, just hearing what appears to be a loose consensus, I would think the next motion would be to move to adopt the EMP recommendation, subject perhaps to modification of the public comment issue as outlined by Justice Baxter.
So it sounds to me, Judge Baker, that you have a amended motion to accept the report for consideration at this time. And so let me, so unless the other speakers wish to add to this, I'd like to take a motion and get some of these off the table. But I will hear from Judge Jacobson.
Thank you. Just listening to several things that have been said, one is that Justice Miller indicated that one thing EMP would like to do between now and August 9th is set a priority list of which of these many, many recommendations to deal with. Perhaps the public comment period initially ought to be on the issue of prioritizing these 147 or so recommendations, and then we deal in groups later on. We're now going to be addressing this grouping of recommendations and give it for another public comment period at that time. That may be a way to deal with this complex issue of needing a rolling public comment period. So that's a suggestion that I'm throwing out.
Thank you. Judge Ellsworth.
I would hold my comments until you clean up.
Until we take one of these votes? Thank you. Justice Baxter?
My comments on the comment period.
You have 30 days.
We're not going to restrict it at all. In other words, I think the comment period should start immediately. And perhaps 30 days is an arbitrary cutoff date. In other words, we just have an open comment period. The matter will be coming up with Justice Miller's committee at a later date, and at that point, the schedule as to which recommendations are going to be focused on when would then be public, and the comment period could be adjusted accordingly. So I didn't intend at all to delay the comment period. I think the comment period should be immediately.
Okay.
And I don't think 30 days really makes any sense, because why restrict it to that, especially when we have as many as we have in this report?
Okay. Sue.
Withdraw my second.
Thank you. There's no second on the original language of accept with gratitude, endorse, acknowledge, et cetera, but we'll wait till we get there. So, Judge Yu, you're up.
Oh, thank you, Chief. I was just wanting to address Judge Wesley, although I'm sort of, the comments are kind of moot now that the second's been withdrawn. But my concern is that as a leadership body, the Judicial Council can't really look like it has an agenda with respect to that motion. And your motion has an agenda attached to it, and that's why I couldn't support it. And when the council has accepted other reports in the past, for example, the Fair Courts one or the bias one, I doubt that the council has ever passed a motion like that. So that's why I wouldn't want to enter into that area.
Edie, Mathai.
I would second Judge Baker's motion.
Okay, thank you. This is there's a second to a full motion of accept the report for consideration. And Judge Rosenberg.
I was going to second Judge Baker's motion, but Ms. Mathai already did so. I just want to indicate that...
Substitute second would be in order?
No. I just want to indicate that if this motion passes, it's a powerful statement. To accept a report is a powerful statement. And I think the next action the council should take is to adopt the recommendation of the E&P committee, which is a process.
Is that your motion?
I will wait until this
okay,
Baker's
so let me
motion
take that.
Passes.
I'm going to call the question. So in terms of Judge Baker's motion to accept the report for consideration, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
Okay. So noted, it passes.
I would move, I'm not sure I need to move it since it's a recommendation of the committee. We should just vote on that recommendation. I don't think it needs to be moved and seconded as a committee recommendation.
Okay, so let's have you, Doug, restate it, because
sure.
you indicated agreement to some of the comments that made in the roundtable about changing the process a little bit.
The recommendation of executive and planning was that as of today, the SEC report be sent out for a 30-day public comment starting today. I would agree that we should be flexible, but I kind of feel that we need to start out with a defined period so people in some sense take it serious, and that if comments come after that, we're not going to throw them away. There will be a public document. We will still have them. And as we move through the process, if there are areas where E&P feels, you know what, we're kind of conflicted on this and we're getting mixed information, we'll start the process again and we'll come back to the council and recommend, you know what, we need to have some public comment on this, and we'll specifically define what our concerns are like we do sometimes with the rules and forms to have that information. So that would be the first part. The second would be that E&P would be assigned to review and consider each of the recommendation. I know there's been some discussion that Jody Patel has already gone through a list of the 140 and indicated some that may have already been adopted in full or in part. My motion is that we will go through each of the recommendations, even ones that may have been indicated by Jody that they have been instituted. We will go through each one. We'll evaluate them. We will, at the August meeting, come back with a summary of the comments. We'll come back with all of the comments for your consideration from the public comment. We will prioritize them, and we will create a timeline for them. We will also seek additional input from other groups or individuals that may have specific information. We will not assign to any other group or create any other committee to do this work. It will be the responsibility of E&P. We will ask the three SEC members who are sitting on the council to be advisory members to the executive and planning to help us in that process. The responsibility will be of either the interim director or our new administrative director to implement those with oversight, to implement those that the Judicial Council recommends for adoption with oversight by the Judicial Council, executive and planning, with the assistance of the three SEC members. That's E&P's recommendation.
That's your recommendation.
Chief, may I make a comment on the recommendation? As a judicial branch loyalist, I would just like to say to those that might read the transcript of this hearing later or who might be listening to it, that referral of the report to the Executive and Planning Committee does not represent unnecessary delay of the report. It does not represent some conspiratorial effort to kill the recommendations of the SEC report. And I would just like to note that this will be my first opportunity to vote as a council member. And
September.
Yeah. No, he's June 1st.
June 1st.
June 1st.
Oh,
don't, you, June 1st.
Dave, don't mess it up, okay?
I believe I was appointed effective June 1st right. as a voting member, for those that weren't sure. And I will take Judge Rosenberg's advice that I won't mess up my first vote.
Okay. So on this E&P recommendation, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Recommendation carries. I don't.
I still have another motion.
Okay. Your motion, Judge Wesley?
My second motion, and now that the report has been accepted.
Dave, use your microphone.
Okay. Now, my second motion, now that the report has been accepted, and I was waiting for that, is that the council endorse and implement recommendations 4.1 through 4.4, showing their commitment to the SEC's great effort. And I'd like to take them one at a time. So my first motion would be that the Judicial Council adopt the recommendation that says the council must take an active role in overseeing and monitoring the AOC. I would offer to change the word demanding to requiring transparency, accountability, and efficiency in the AOC's operations and practices. And I move with that amendment to adopt that recommendation.
I will second that motion.
Any further discussion? Yes. Edie Mathai.
I am, as of yesterday, I was on the fence on this question of whether we should move forward at this time with any of these four recommendations with regard to the council itself. However, as I've listened to the discussion and as I've thought about this more, I'm no longer on the fence for a couple of reasons. I've not spoken today, so I haven't had a chance to thank the SEC for the very, very long hours that I know that it took to put that report together. Anyone in this room who's worked on any such project knows that it's an unbelievable amount of work. And I don't want anybody to think that I don't recognize and appreciate that. But it is my understanding that the charge of the SEC was to do an evaluation of the AOC and make recommendations to the council with regard to changes that needed to be made. I believe that every single person on this council is deeply committed to making sure that we do the right thing and we make sure that the necessary changes do get made. The charge of the SEC was, in my opinion, not to direct the council or put words into the council's mind or mouths about what our obligation is. We understand our obligation. It is set forth in the Constitution, Article 6. And it is set forth in the rules of court. And I personally am committed to make sure that as a member of the council, I live up to those obligations. As a member of E&P, I intend to live up to those obligations. And I believe that everybody on this council intends to live up to those obligations. And I think that is sufficient.
Thank you. I think the motion is there. I think it's summed up. We've had enough discussion. I call the question. Angela.
Yesterday, I was actually interested in maybe taking up 4.1 and 4.2 today because they seem pretty uncontroversial. And as Edith has said, they seem to reaffirm what is the role of this council. And given the observation made by the SEC report, I think it is in some ways proper for us to recommit and reaffirm our obligation to carry out the role of the council. One of the concerns I have about adopting these recommendations now, and I think it's a little bit problematic to take them one by one because I think they're intended to be as a group, and to endorse one of them now but then have concerns about, say, 4.3, which is longer and I think which many of us might want to wordsmith a little bit, I think is quite possibly going to send the wrong message and send a message of under-commitment and undervaluing what I think everyone agrees has been highlighted, which is the critical importance of reasserting our authority and our accountability over the operations of the AOC. The concern that I have, though, about adopting these right now is the concern that was made, that was articulated very well by representatives of the public interest organizations earlier today, and that is that the recommendations are primarily toward efficiency and the business model, and I think also toward fulfilling the AOC's obligations to courts and to the trial courts. The AOC has another ultimate constituency, which is the public. And I'm a little concerned that I would wordsmith these, quite honestly, to reintroduce back into them that commitment to the public interest. And for that reason, I'm not entirely comfortable with endorsing these today because I don't think they should be taken piecemeal. I think they're intended as a group. I am completely comfortable with and eager to participate in reaffirming the role of the council and dedicating ourselves and committing ourselves to that role and not letting the AOC become a runaway organization and reining it back in and all of those things. But I am concerned about how I would now wordsmith these, and taking them piecemeal, I think, is in some ways problematic.
Thank you. Thank you. Judge Baker, then Judge Kaufman.
Trying very hard not to be redundant. I'm very grateful for the fine work done by the SEC. I think as these comments illustrate, it's important to put the report out for public comment. Mm-hmm. And perception is everything. This fine report was prepared by 12 judges, and it potentially affects millions of Californians, the people that we serve. And I think that if we're going to put the report out for public comment, we should put the entire report out for public comment and let this process play out in that fashion. So I would be disinclined to vote for the current motion.
Thank you. Judge Kaufman, Judge Rosenberg.
I agree with Judge Baker. And quite honestly, the motion puts us in an awkward position. If we vote against it, I don't want it to be perceived that we're saying, stop, we're hiding this thing. We're not. That's nobody's intention. Nobody's here, I've heard so far, wants to bury this thing. We want to make this work. And by voting against this motion, which I will vote against it right now, I don't want it to be perceived that I'm saying hide it or stop it or anything like that. I want to do it right. I want to take my time. I want to do it right. And I trust the people on the E&P will do it right. And so this motion, and all four of them are premature at this point.
Point of order?
Yes.
Can it be tabled?
I was going to make a motion.
Okay, we could do this, but first, I take that. It's in front of my lobe, but I need Judge Herman to...
Well, Judge Wesley did ask Judge Wykoff, who's the chair of the committee, you know, what process he would recommend regarding this report, and the idea was that it, in line with what the contemplated process was, that it would go to the council rather than being
voted on either piecemeal or in whole today. And I think we all agree that this is a deliberative process that we need to go through. So.
Well, I must say I listened too, and I think that the SEC committee was looking for some kind of a commitment from this council. And these are non-controversial recommendations. They are already in our governance model. And all they are is a reaffirmation of our commitment as a council to do what we're supposed to do as a council, and that is act like a council. So this motion made in good faith to show a commitment, and all it does is restate what's already in our governing rules. So I'm not going to withdraw this motion.
I would agree with that, but I believe if there's a second made, this is a non-debatable motion.
Right.
I was going to make a motion to table this discussion until the August meeting, and let me explain why. I firmly believe that there are two sets of recommendations from the SEC. 143 relate to the AOC. Four relate to the Judicial Council. These are the four, 4.1 through 4.4. Not a doubt in my mind that this council will adopt 4.1 through 4.4. I am convinced, however, as a result of this discussion, that there will be some wordsmithing. For example, Judge Wesley already wordsmithed by taking out the word demanding and putting in the word requiring. There may be a reason to put in the word the public in 4.2. There may be other tweaking. We've discussed the business model versus other models. So with some tweaking, that may be appropriate. So I would move that we table, and I think the EMP will bring this back at the very first meeting, table this discussion on 4.1 through 4.4 till the August meeting of the council.
And I'm going to ask you a point of clarification on the rules. We have a second on this motion. You're the second.
Oh, then I'll second it. I mean,
on Judge Wesley's motion.
Judge Wesley. Yes.
Yes. So now you're making the motion to table.
Yes.
Correct.
Ms. Davis had already made
A person can make a motion or a second and then vote against it. A person can make a motion.
I think we just saw that a little bit.
I believe Ms. Davis made a motion.
That's correct. I raised a point of order. Can we table? That's
yes,
what I said.
Okay.
She didn't make a motion. She asked a question.
Okay. That's true. I raised the point. I would have made the motion if the point of order had been yes, you can.
Okay, so I'm going to deem that.
I know we don't go.
Made.
We don't go by Robert's rules here, and I'm still getting used to that.
We go by Rosenberg's rules.
So is there then?
No, wait a minute. And I realize there is a motion to table.
And then I second that.
And you second that. No. And then I saw out of the corner of my Judge Earl.
It's a non-debatable
motion.
Okay. Must be are voted you speaking on to this non-debatable motion?
No.
Okay, then.
Non-debatable.
All in favor.
This is to table.
To table.
Till August.
Till August. Our August meeting.
You don't table to a date certain. I don't.
Say that again. I hear you mumbling over there.
Do we table to a date certain?
You can either table without a date or table to a date.
Are you being more specific, Ms. Davis?
Did you want
to under Robert's rules, if you table to a date uncertain, it's hard to resuscitate. So I would August. Say I would table to August.
Our August meeting. So are you speaking to
that's
the
under
motion?
Robert's rules.
Okay. It's non-debatable.
I know, but it's
a motion to table is non-debatable.
That's after the 30-day period. I just want to make sure that that's August
yes,
meeting.
Yes, our August
after.
Meeting.
Yes. This is June.
After the public comment period.
Yes.
All in favor of tabling the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Opposed.
Right. Motion carries.
I think that's two-thirds, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
By two-thirds,
I think so.
I think we made it.
Yeah.
So I don't want the parliamentary business is very important with the two of us. It gets everyone speaking, and then you can see that it's important to how we proceed. But I don't want it to take away at all from the import of this report, from your fine presentation, and again, with universal gratitude for the work you all put in toward this report. And it will live with council for as long as I'm here. I asked for it. It's a hard look. I have to be a bit of a masochist for this, but I intend to follow through with it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.